Good afternoon, Shadow Hills. Well, here it is Wednesday, and this is the first podcast of the week. We're doing better. And for you snowbirds, it's safe to come back. It's finally cooled down, and we're back to the weather that we all moved here for. So there's news to report. Here's Kim.
Good afternoon, everyone. I'm back here after a couple people even requested after the board meeting. They didn't want to listen to the whole board meeting. Would I just come in here and give a recap on everything? But we will do that. First of all, I want to thank Linda Austin. She's going to run for the board again. I am very grateful, very thankful. I am also going to run for the board again. There are some people who wrote to me and said, why?
I did that too.
Bob asked me why, and you know, there's a lot of volunteers to make this complex work. There's people who've been on committees for years, 6-8 years to help. And you know, the basic point is public services. People like to help. It's very nice. You know, 80-90% of the people say thank you, and they're very grateful. We might not always agree. There's only about 10% of the people who are, you know, inappropriate, disrespectful, and I don't pay attention to that. So, but everybody else, it's okay. We all get together and try to make it work. And each person has their own, you know, own capability and their own benefit to contribute. So hopefully Linda and I are contributing, that you'll support it again, and we'll continue. And
you can have my yard sign in your yard. My yard.
By the way, I'm not putting up any signs. I'm not buying any signs. They're too expensive. And if I'm not elected without a sign, that's the way it'll be. I'll use email instead. So anyway, board election's coming up, just to let everybody know. Now, let's talk about the overview of the board meeting real quick. I sent out this morning, very quickly, the new proposed rule changes, taking into account all of the comments we got and the questions we got, which then made it clear we didn't explain these rules well, and hopefully now the new ones do the job. So the political signs and flags and event signs and flags has been pretty explanatory. Most people have said, okay, understand. Some people have requested that more people voted for 1 and 2 signs rather than 3, and the board decided on 3, given that. The most was for 3 signs, but hopefully people will be understanding. The party wall situation, hopefully now this becomes clear. We are talking about party walls between 2 homeowners. We are not talking about party wall between a homeowner and the HOA. That is a separate section. So if you have a party wall from your house which borders the HOA, if that wall falls over, the HOA has to pay for it entirely. So the HOA will never be in a position to arbitrate that dispute because CC&Rs already say we have to pay for it. Now, the exception would be simple. If you drive a tractor as a private property owner through that wall, well, then we would charge you. We didn't cause it. You'd caused it. So that's what that's all about. But the party wall rules have to be added because we're required in the CC&Rs to do something. We have to do something. And this process is thought to be, and if people have other ideas, please let us know. But we didn't like the idea, the board did not like the idea of forcing homeowners to hire professional arbitrators. That can be $2,000 to $5,000. We thought if we could use our own system, it would be no cost. And so the only cost would be the report, the engineering report to determine what's wrong with the wall. Now, this process is non-binding. This is not binding arbitration. It's just we're following the rules. We set up a system, and then there'll be a decision. And when we're done, if the two private property owners want to sue each other, they can. So, but this at least fulfills our obligation and hopefully does something in an inexpensive way. And then the last rule has to deal with guests. And I talked about this at the board meeting a little bit, and I put this out. It's it's interesting that one could argue a person over the age 55 cannot be a guest here because there's no description of it. Now, we're not doing that, but now we need to clean this up to make sure we know exactly what's going on, that people over the age of 55 may be guests. And we're talking about guests. A guest who comes in during the day can come in every day if they don't stay overnight. It's okay. Guests, family members who come and stay because they're taking care of you because of a medical condition, your rehabilitation, that kind of thing. They can stay forever. There's exemptions. So this has to do with just your family visits. There's no caregiving. There's no exemption in the law. They can only stay for 60 nights, 60 days and nights. And then they either have to vacate or they have to become permanent qualified residents. Now, the reason we come up with 60 is simple. That's in the CCNRs. We can't change that part. So those are the rules that are being posted. Also, the hours, the hours that the tennis and pickleball courts will operate. Rather than being open till 10 p.m., they're going to close at 8:30 p.m. This is being done to hopefully be quiet next to the residents involved over to Santa Rosa. And we just watched, there's very, very few reservations between 8:30 and 10. So it didn't seem like it was going to impact, but people definitely write in and we can talk about it. Now, the Frontier has started installation. It has begun. There's no question. People are being installed. I was installed. I was one of the first three people to be installed. And I got my bill. And my bill was $52 a month less for the exact same services. I didn't change a thing just to see what would happen. So for all intents and purposes, the HOA Frontier contract is saving me $40 a month. I'd invest $12 to get $40 off every day of the week. I have heard from the people who have called in, most of the savings are between $50 and $75. You don't know for sure until after you get your bill because of all the taxes. But that process has begun. Now, we did talk about the budget. So let me go through this a little bit. The dues for 2020 is $281. I know I've talked about this multiple times. The balanced budget for this year is $281. The HOA gave a credit, which reduced your dues to $273. But to be fair, you cannot use $273 as a basis for then deciding how much the dues were increased. No, we did not increase dues 8%. We were on a balanced budget. We increased dues 4.6%, namely $281 to $294. The additional $12 is the Frontier bill of $12, bringing it to $306. We don't include that in the analysis because the Frontier $12 was not part of the operations budget this year. It was voted in by 70% of the people who wanted it to go forward. And to be fair, if I'm going to save $40, my actual dues goes down by $40 because of that savings as a result of the Frontier contract. So we set the $12 aside to do the comparison from this year to next year. This year's $281, next year's $294. That's 4.6%. The board then decided to give a one-time credit of $144 to every homeowner. It will come in January. We're not exactly sure how that's going to happen, but we think at this point, the projection is we will send out a mailer with a generic coupon, and you will have to mail that in. Or you do your auto pay, but your January bill will be $162 instead of $162 instead of $306. It's going to be reduced by $144. Now, for all intents and purposes, what this means is the balance budget of $294 is reduced to $282. Because we give you a one-time credit of $144. You divide that by 12 months. Your average monthly now is $282. This is a $1 increase over this year. Dues this year were $281. Dues next year, when you factor all that in, is really $282. I know everybody will look at it different, but that's up to you. That increase is 0.3%. Now, I also believe, I have to tell you, I think it's fair that if I say $40, I should take that off. So my net dues is only running $242 to $252 a month for the HOA now. So that's the budget items. The budget is posted online so you can see the actual final budget, and it'll show you line by line exactly what the projected costs are. Now, we are hopeful. When we did this budget, we planned very conservatively to figure the worst case scenario. That budget next year is planning on no guests and no outside play for golf and no guests for the Shadows restaurant. Now, what that means then is, if we are able to keep the golf course open next year, and if we're able at some point to open Shadows to full capacity, the income level will increase, creating, hopefully, surpluses next year. So that's the goal, but we wanted to make sure that we budgeted for the worst case scenario, because nobody knows for sure what this COVID problem is going to be all about. Now, that always, every year it brings up the questions. I've had a couple people say, why not just close the restaurant? Why are we operating a restaurant? Because it loses $300,000 a year. I'm going to give the explanation I usually give, and that's okay. It's fun to give. The budget for next year, the subsidy for Shadows is projected at $11.19 a month. Last year it was $8. The reason it's up is because, what did I say? We've projected no guests, meaning the income's lower. Yes, we can shut down the restaurant and save money. There's no doubt about it. But I'm going to ask everybody, why don't we shut down the pools to save money? They're costing us. Why not shut down the tennis courts and pickleball courts? They cost us. We're subsidizing them. How about we close the clubhouse to crafts, card players, billiards? We subsidize them. How about reducing the landscaping cost to 2 years ago, and let's return to the landscaping that everybody complained about? We'll save another $4. We could close the gym permanently. No fitness classes. That'll save us money. We could stop all the lifestyle events, and that will save us more money. The point here is, ladies and gentlemen, everything here is subsidized. Everything costs money. So my question is, some people use one activity, other people use something else. Just because someone does not use Shadows does not mean it is not important to those residents that like to use it. I don't use the pool, but I wouldn't think twice about shutting it down just to save money. The people that use the pool don't want it closed. The people that want to play pickleball don't want it closed. The people that like the gym, they don't want it closed. So why would we close Shadows? Are the people that want to use Shadows less important than all the rest? I'm not sure why everybody likes to pick on the people who want to be in Shadows. They like Shadows. So why don't we all agree we're going to subsidize Shadows like we do every other amenity in this complex, for which we all agreed to when we bought a home here and came?
I think the reason is that it's a separate budget item, and it sticks out like a sore thumb.
So there you go. So now the interesting part is, and the irony here is, just about everything else costs more money than Shadows as far as a subsidy. I could read them to you. Facilities cost more, G&A costs more, golf costs more, property protection costs more, landscaping's more, recreation and lifestyles, the subsidy for that costs more. So utilities is more, fitness is more. It just goes on. Shadows is, as far as an individual independent activity, is one of the least subsidized costs of the entire place, of the entire community. So, no, I don't think there's any anticipation of ever to shut down shadows. It's as valuable and as beneficial as pools and billiards and crafts and everything else. You have to take your pick.
Well, not only that, but some people sell their homes every year. And the attraction of a development like this without its own restaurant would be nil. We would be way behind all the other planned communities in the Coachella Valley. That would severely affect resale values.
Very well could. Now, there is the suggestion by many that we should get an outside contractor to do it so we don't have to subsidize it by that $11. Now, there's a couple of dilemmas there to think about, because I've seen this happen before. One is, if we're subsidizing shadows to the tune of $300,000, the new entity coming in has to make up somewhere that loss. Yes, maybe they know how to operate more efficiently, but making up $300,000 loss on the efficiency of an operation could be difficult. So what's the other answer to make up that $300,000 loss? You raise the price. Very well could be that to the, and I know if you don't use shadows, you don't care about this part, but the people who do will care. So the answer for an outside operator could be, well, we got to raise the prices 20%, 25% across the board. Well, an answer, I will counter, one of the answers to not losing money in the pool is, let's charge everybody a dollar when they come use it every day. That's an answer. I think it's a bad answer, but that is an answer. You just increase the price. People who play tennis, they got to play a dollar in order to play. We could make the subsidy go way down by everybody paying as they go. Golfers pay as they go. They pay a portion. That's not the answer. The answer is understanding we moved here knowing we were going to subsidize all these things and we get to use the part we want for now $306 a month. I will challenge you to go out into the valley and find another community that offers what we do for $306 a month. There aren't going to be too many. Most of them are much higher. So I think you need to take the entire picture into place and go, hey, I'm using the tennis courts in the pool and I'm only paying dues to get to use it. Well, be sympathetic to the people in shadows. They want to use it too without an increased cost. There's one other dilemma with trying to get an outside contractor. Our CC&Rs do not allow for a contract over 1 year. If you all recall, we had to have a resident vote in order to get permission to do the 5-year contract with Frontier. We would have to get a resident vote with permission to do a 5-year contract with a restaurateur to come in and run shadows. So our 1-year contracts do not really allow us to get an outside contractor, because no outside contractor is going to invest money into an operation where they might get removed after 1 year. So those are some stumbling blocks. Now, we also have, I talked about rules, we also have the new law coming into effect. And we talked about this at the board meeting, and this will be coming up hot and heavy next year. And it's called AB 3182. And what the state of California is doing is trying to make available more housing units. And what they call them is ADUs, accessory dwelling units. And what this new law is saying, an HOA may not stop a homeowner from renting out an ADU unit. If they have one, they get to rent it out. Currently, our CC&Rs do not allow a homeowner to, for instance, rent out their casitas. They may not do that. A homeowner may only rent out the entire home, including the casitas. Now, under the new law, AD units, HOAs may not restrict this process. But keep in mind, an AD unit by law must have a kitchen and a bathroom. most of the casitas on our properties do not have a kitchen. Most of them have a bedroom and a bathroom. But without a kitchen, the unit does not qualify as an ADU unit. Therefore, it may not be rented out. The HOA governing documents would prevail. But somebody could apply for a city permit, and if it was granted, they could build a bathroom into that casitas.
Kitchen.
A kitchen, I mean, if they have a bathroom. They could build a kitchen, and then that unit would be allowed to be rented out, and it wouldn't matter what our governing documents say. So there's two parts that are real, that we have to look at. The other part, which I don't think is going to happen a whole lot, are these things called the JDUs, and I think those are junior units. So a junior dwelling unit, which is where you wall off part of your house. So you wall off part of your house to make it a separate part with separate entry, and it has a separate bathroom and a separate kitchen, a separate bathroom, and then that could be rented out too. I don't know if too much of that happening here. We have the casitas, but not that. What is not allowed under this law is for somebody to rent out a room in the house. So our governing documents would still prevail. A resident at the moment may not rent out a room in their house. You can have a guest, but you cannot have a renter in your house. So in fact, those guest rules we talked about, renters are not included. Sorry, you can't rent a room for 30 days and say, oh, they're guests. No, can't do that. Now, this new law also nullifies our 90-day minimum for rentals. The state is saying that HOAs may no longer require minimum amount of time to be more than 30 days. So in January, the board will be looking at as far as stating, okay, people can rent for 30 days. And don't let that bother you, folks. I've been in contact with the management company here to invest. I've investigated this last time. And after investigating 200 HOAs in the Valley, we couldn't find another one that had a limit more than 30 days as far as the minimum rental amount. Sun City Palm Desert, for instance, they can rent their homes for 30 days. That seemed to resolve the issue of people coming in for a week just because of Stagecoach. We all the HOAs say the minimum 30 days was fine. The point now is we have to move in that direction. The law also is going to say we have to amend our bylaws and governing documents, the CC&Rs. So next year, we will have to work on drafting changes to the particular sections in question. And then we'll have to go out for a ballot vote, probably in the fall next year, October, November, December, something like that, whereby we need to spend 3 months and we got to get a whole bunch of people together to organize to make sure we get enough ballots to pass these amendments. State is making it a requirement. So the two big parts, accessory dwelling units. If somebody does have a casitas with a kitchen and a bathroom, they will by law be able to rent them out even while they live in their home. And the 30-day minimum, our 90-day minimum will drop to 30. Now, when we go to amend this, we have a special little thing in our CC&Rs, a special little clause that allows for one-day rentals of homes if you hire a management company. Now, that's the one to me that doesn't help us. So somebody could hire a management company, and then they can rent their house out for a weekend, for a week during Stagecoach. That's the more problematic issue to me. So when we go to redraft the new CC&Rs to reduce the 90-day minimum to 30-day minimum, we will also draft to eliminate the management company rule so that you can rent for less than 30 days. The goal will be that the minimum will be 30 days, period, and nobody will rent for less than 30 days. That would be consistent to me. So we'll be working on that. And then by next fall, we're going to have a ballot vote to make that happen. In the meantime, if you're invited to a party this weekend, don't go. If you have a party plan, stop it. Everybody, we have to understand, gatherings with the fewest number of people, you're allowed to have a gathering with three homes in your backyard. Stay apart, wear masks. We want everybody to stay safe. I've already told you the story about my lovely bride's hairdresser, and I'm going to tell you the next story is about one of my staff people up north who also had a party, and their uncle died. 30 days. It didn't take very long. So these people do not think these gatherings are worthwhile. If you're in the wrong place at the wrong time, it's just not going to be beneficial. I want you to stay healthy, stay safe. I will think about you, and we'll be talking. Hopefully, I might not be talking to you Thursday or Friday, in which case we'll talk next week. Take care.
And I'd like to thank you for listening. This podcast is going to take us over 80,000 total downloads. And I say that to Kim because it saved him so much typing. With that, have a good weekend. Bye-bye.